I know that for me, learning to inhabit other people and then learning how to deal with that was a lot. Like, that was a lot.
You are now listening to the podcast where authors inspire listeners to become authors, the Going North Podcast. I'm your host, certified self-leadership trainer, best-selling author, and book enthusiast, Dom Brightman. And you're going to be listening to a different author that will inspire you to join the business of immortality, known as authorship. Now let the fun begin. Today's episode is sponsored by book number two from Dominic Dom Brightman, Stay the Course, The Elite Performer's 7 Secret Keys to Sustainable Success. It is the field guide to help unleash the elite performer that is inside of you. Cop it today on Amazon.com or heading over to DomBrightman.com and snag it in book, ebook, and audiobook. So that way you can take it on the go and get yourself on the go to your northbound success. And today on the Highlight Reel Build Up for Authors, known as the Going North Podcast, we got another super special, awesome human for you today, courtesy of one of the best websites on planet Earth, going strong today, like 8-pack abs, known as podmatch.com. The wonderful site where podcast guests get to connect with podcast hosts, and if they're cool, they're freaking in. And today's guest is cooler than two cucumbers, indeed, because she's one from one of my favorite states in the U.S. of A., known as North Carolina, y'all. That's right, indeed. The North Kakalaki, y'all. That's right, indeed. So take your shirt off, spin it in your hand like a helicopter, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. Because today's wonderful guest, y'all, she's a magical mom as well as a ghostwriter, poet, and she knows it, as well as a professor and a filmmaker. So let's give it up for Miss AK, who is not 47, the wonderful Autumn Karen. How you doing today, Autumn?
Thank you so much for having me, Dom. I'm doing well.
There you go. That means you got all the water, huh? You're doing well. Folks come to you for hydration. I love it.
I feel like it does. Between students and clients and filmmaking people, I'm like, somebody's always wanting something.
Oh, yeah. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. They're like, yay, college professor. Leave an apple at her desk. Oh, wait, this ain't grade school. We're safe. All right, cool.
Although I do get weird gifts from students occasionally. Like, I got a giant chocolate bar at Christmas a couple years ago. It was like giant. I was like, okay, grades are already turned in, kid. I can't help you.
Bro, I just thought you were cute. Which you are, so don't so no surprises there.
It's just the filters, right?
Yeah, the autumn filter. So, my goodness, as you know, with all introductions, they're not allowed to be 500.5 years long, and I probably only covered, I don't know, 0.5 days. So, my filling in the cavities on how you became the amazing autumn that you are today.
Oh, gosh. No, it's mostly just sticking with it. Like, I do have the luxury of having a good education, right? I didn't come from a family who was educated. I had a lot of teachers in school. My mom, you know, was a high school graduate, but that's it. And then we grew up with very little. And then I had a lot of teachers in high school and grade school and whatnot who supported me and were like, hey, you need to go do things. And one thing my mama did know was she's like, you need to go to college. And that was just not an option. It's like, you got to go to college. So college really, that was the thing that did it. And I am an accidental professor. I'm an accidental ghostwriter. I didn't mean to do any things. Like, it was all just like, wait, how did this happen? So I am one of those kind of lucky success stories of somebody who saw the doors and just like walked in them, but really out of necessity. So I became a ghostwriter because I was a mom of four. I had four kids under the age of 7. And that was a lot. And I was a primary breadwinner. Even when I was married, I was always the primary breadwinner. Didn't matter. And I was teaching public school. So I have a master's in special ed. And so I was teaching special ed. And it was not enough money to feed all them kids. I mean, shocker. Public school salary was not enough money to feed all them kids. So I started writing lesson plans online to, like, add extra income. And then somebody said, well, could you write a blog to help us promote the lesson and plan? And I was like, if you can pay me cash money, I can do whatever you want. And so then that turned into blogs, and then that turned into ebooks, and then books. And then I had been writing books for a long time and heard an audiobook version of one of the books that I wrote for a client. And it just short-circuited my brain, Dom. It was just like bzz, like one of those movie moments. And so I'd started out college as a theater major, wanted to go be an actress, and was like, I need to do that. Like, I got to hear my words come out of people's mouths. Books are not enough. And so I went back to grad school in my 40s to get a degree in screenwriting. And so I now have a production company and have one film in production currently and another one in pre-production. And so, you know, there you go.
There you go. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. She changed Karen to killer because she's killing it, y'all. That's right, indeed. That's right, indeed. One movie under your magical bell, whole production company, becoming a ghostwriter. And shoot, accidentally. So what was the accident besides being a wonderful mom having to feed her kiddos? Like, did you just wake up one day at public school and then you tripped and fell within a random broom with the white sheet on top? Was like, write books.
Well, funnily enough, oh, this is going to be horrible, Dom. My kind of the turning point in my ghostwriting career does have to do with white sheets. So I wrote a book. It's called Mississippi Still Burning. He's a black preacher from Los Angeles who ended up in a prison cell with Edgar Ray Killen, who committed the Mississippi Burning murders. And during their time together, James got Killen to sign over the KKK to him, to this black preacher. And I was working with a company, and James wanted a white female Southern writer, and I fit the bill. And he and I just clicked, so I wrote his memoir. And that one, he wanted my name on it. So that was kind of the turning point. So, yes, it does have to do with white sheets, man. Isn't that funny?
So was that like your first ever like full ghost written project book, or is that just the one that finally like broke through?
So I think that was book number 7 or 8 or something like that. Up until that point, I was a true ghost writer. No, actually, that was probably book number 12. What am I saying? I don't know. That was a long way in. Up until that point, I was a true ghostwriter, which means that I wrote books and then there was never a name attached to it, like other than the person. So I had non-disclosures and it was just their thing. The reason that was a turning point was because Reverend Stern wanted a co-author credit. He was like, nobody is ever going to believe I wrote this thing. I want to be honest about it. He was an honest guy like that. Now I use it in the past tense. He died in 2019 of bladder cancer. So it was very sad. He was a dear mentor and friend and a real loss to the activist community in general. So he wanted my name on it. So that was kind of the turning point in terms of me having some kind of credit. And then when I had that credit, that led to more work and kind of higher profile folks. So there you go.
There you go. That's right. Higher profile, y'all. That's right, indeed. The people with the weed, a higher profile. That's right, indeed. Let me stop. Just metaphors. Don't worry about it.
A memoir for a rock musician, man, and I'm gonna tell you, oh, there's a lot of that stuff.
There you go. Oh man, well, that's freaking awesome indeed. Freaking awesome indeed. And shoot, I think the usual homework they usually try to do before folks pop on the show, and 24 books to your name, and now you got freaking 28, which is freaking awesome indeed. So what's like your average, I say, book per year in terms, or at least average project completion per year that you usually take? Because ghostwriting is a lot of time and effort, especially it sounds like, especially when it comes to the, I guess, memoirs and the biographies where I have to really get to know the person.
So I average about 2 books a year. Some years it's more. I don't ever average less than that. Last year I had kind of a banner year because I wrapped 3 books. books. Now, to be fair, two of those were like long simmering projects that the pandemic kind of stalled out. But I finished three books last year, and I also finished two screenplays. And what else? Oh, yeah, and I finished my master's degree, and I like started a production company. So 2024 was good to me. 2025 is going to be better. Yeah, so it takes me around 12 months to write a book. Kind of depends on the project. Sometimes as long as 18, depends on like the timeline. But 12 months for a book is about right, Dom. Like, it didn't take that long.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, because I was just curious, because folks have different speeds, and it depends on the genre, too, because we've had, you might be the 11th ghostwriter we've had on the show, but quota-wise, it's like one ghostwriter for every 100 authors, I guess, from this podcast. So it's like, yeah, it's a rarity, because it's like, oh, you, like NDAs, it's like you got to sign those and everything, and it's like, it's like, yeah, I wrote this thing, but they will never know I'm in the shadows. And some folks take, well, I wouldn't say the sweet old time, but some of them are like fast. We have one ghostwriter, Kat Hudson, who writes a lot of sci-fi fiction novels. And just the fact that her average is 10,000 words a day, I'm like, dude, it's freaking insane. Just cranking those things out.
No, but 10,000 words in a day, that's like, Kat sounds like she's on it. That's about right. If I have a hard writing day and I like get rid of the kids and carve them out in like a healthy way, I'm not getting rid of my kids. But if
they... Disclaimer, right?
If I have a hard writing day, my biggest day ever was 15,000 in a day. And that was for like a fiction book. And you can churn it out. Once you kind of get in that mindset, it's about flow and mindset. And I train my students and I train the people I work with to write faster. So it's a muscle, just like anything else.
Yeah, so any writing rituals you do to get in that magical zone, especially being a busy mom, I'm pretty sure it's probably more of an uphill battle. And encouragement to others listening, like, hey, I got kids too. I'm trying to finish this darn thing. But you know, life be life.
Life be life. No, that's, my kids are older now. So I've got a 19-year-old, 16-year-old, and a 12-year-old. He's going to be 19 tomorrow. He's not quite 19 yet. But they know that, like, when mom turns on, I really like to write to Pomodoros, which is timed. It's a timed writing technique. Are you familiar with that, Dom?
Oh, yeah. Didn't it start up as like on a pomegranate or something, a pomegranate timer, I think, years ago? Or am I just hallucinating?
Yeah, this guy in Italy in the 80s. He was like an Italian student, and he had like that's why it's in Italian. He had a little tomato timer. And so I swear by the Pomodoro technique because it forces you to get into the mindset. The hardest part is not staying in, it's getting in. It's like that adjustment period that your brain needs. So there's this whole truth to the idea that multitasking is impossible. We have plenty of research on this. Nobody can actually multitask, Dom. We switch back and forth, and that time, like, we lose. You lose something every single time you switch back and forth. So I love the Pomodoro technique because it helps you to focus. So that's what I do. I am, I love using YouTube Pomodoro timers. And I think it's because, you know, my grandma always had Fox News on like 24 hours a day. And so, and before Fox News, she used to have, now this is horrible, she used to have Rush Limbaugh on like all the time when I was growing up. So you had to learn to focus around that, right? And I think still to this day, I like to have something on the TV when I'm focused because that's how I grew up with my grandma with all that stuff on. So I turn on these lo-fi YouTube channels and so there's movement and there's music and there's timers. And I can just churn stuff out when I give myself all of that.
Good deal indeed. And because I was curious, I'm like, yeah, because some folks have different things they use to get into that good old peak performance, stay ready to crank out some great content. So, hey, it's good stuff indeed. Good stuff indeed. So, my goodness, so getting your magical name out there in multiple ways and really doing even more work. So, what helped you to Well, it wasn't really a switch. It's more like an add-on to the filmmaking. So, my goodness. So, how was that like starting a production company? And in North Cackalack, it's not like New York or California. Like, is there even a film scene in North Cackalack yet? You might have to be the founder of this whole thing, right?
Carolina has a really, now we lost a lot of it because we had the HB2 trans bathroom bill, and we lost a lot of folks because our legislature is, well, problematic is an understatement. And then we used to have big film incentives. So like Iron Man 3 was made in North Carolina, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles made in North Carolina, like
Wow.
One Tree Hill, Dawson's Creek. We used to have a ton of production, especially down by Wilmington. So there's a ton of movies that you have heard of. You know, Hunger Games was filmed here. So we do have a significant filmmaking industry. And then when I was finishing my MFA, I went to a top 10 film school. So we have a top 10 film school here. It's called UNCSA. And Proud Pickle over here, that's our mascot, Proud Pickle. Shout out to my film school. So there's a lot of production that happens here. And the question for everybody in film school is, are you moving to New York or LA? There's a lot of production that is leaving Los Angeles. I mean, if we're talking about where production is growing, it's really in like New Mexico, Nevada. It's not, productions are leaving. And besides that, the industry as a whole right now, in the wake of the writer strike, is contracting. Like the streaming services have kind of screwed us over, Dom. Corporations have screwed us over. We are shocked. So when we were looking at it, I was never going to be able to leave because my kids are here and I got to get them through school. And then I had a couple of other folks, Mary Craven Adams, she was my cohort and we are close friends through the program. She's an attorney and a writer as well, and she works in entertainment law. She's getting in entertainment law, but she has a long history in law. And so she and I started that, and then Stephen Stone, he is they're a fantastic person. So they came in as well, and they have significant credits to their name already before they came to the MFA. And then Ellie Pobus, she's a young go-getter writer. So the four of us came out and really wanted to create something that was focused on women and gender diverse creators, because we saw that, like, behind the camera, still a lot of white guys, man. Like, it's just still a lot of that. And even as we change what's in front, the creativity behind it is still, it's hard out there for people who are not straight white guys. Like, I'm sorry. Like, no offense to straight white guys. I got three sons. But we wanted to create something different. So that's we Medusa's Gaze Films is the name of our development and production company. And we have one piece that we brought in that Stephen, their piece came in, and then we've got pieces that I've developed, and we're launching a documentary right now. We're going to launch a screenplay contest. That's happening. The screenplay contest is going to launch in February. Super excited about that. And just kind of trying to build up some different kinds of representation from right here in North Carolina. And you can film stuff anywhere. I mean, there's crews here, you know, it's not a big deal to like make movies from somewhere else, Dom. I thought it was going to be. I thought I was going to have to figure out how I'd get to LA, but it's really not the case.
Yeah, that's good. Probably way cheaper too. Shoot.
Right? It's cheaper to make stuff out here. It's cheaper to live out here. And we have a lot of people because of School of the Arts. There's a lot of people that go back and forth. So, like, I had professors who lived in LA and that would fly here and fly back and forth. So, you don't need to live out there. And especially as a writer, I mean, man, like, you can write scripts from anywhere. You can't really write TV. You have to be in a writer's room for that. And so that's not really feasible for me, but that's okay. I can write movies and pilots and other stuff.
There you go, other stuff indeed. So what inspired the name of Deuce's Gaze? Because I'm thinking snake hair and turning into stone. It's like, I have to stare. Oh crap, I'm stuck.
So that is the purpose. That exactly your reaction was a purpose for the name. It is a play on the female gaze, right? So the idea that we are trying to elicit films and filmmakers who come from a different perspective than the dominant male gaze. So there you go. That's where Medusa's gaze. We toyed around with a lot of things, but we liked that it had some venom to it because we're a spicy bunch of folks. Oh. So yeah, there you go.
Well, okay. All right. But don't worry, y'all. I'm still talking. The interview's still happening. You won't turn into stone when you see all them stuff.
You don't seem like one of, like, the bad guy. What is that? Not all men? You seem like a not all men guy, so.
Yeah, exactly. It's like whoever's got the talent and the skill and they know what the heck they're doing, like, shoot, let them thrive. Shoot. Like, I don't care what freaking gender you are. Shoot. We're all the same planet, darn it. Oh, my goodness. My goodness. We got this. And here you're going to be doing a ghost writing textbook, if you will, in the coming months after the. During the time of this recording, so my goodness, mind filling in folks on what to expect from that book when it releases.
So what you're going to expect is basically a 14-week breakdown of how you can teach yourself to be a ghostwriter. So for people who are out there who are not in the university setting, you can pick up this book and it will carry you through not just how to do it as a craft, but there's also sections on business and understanding the commerce of it. And then there's also understanding your own ability. So there's a self-help piece very much baked into this book. Because I know that for me, learning to inhabit other people and then learning how to deal with that, that was a lot. Like, that was a lot. Figuring out how to handle personalities and manage folks. So there's a big piece of that collaborative understanding. And then it is all under, there's an underpinning of academic, I don't know, chutzpah to it. There's an underpinning of academic stuff too as well. So you'll get a deeper understanding of what it means to interview somebody and, like, what does that power dynamic look like? What does it look like for you to push back on people? Like, I have a client who, gosh, they want to title their book something and it's horrible. And I'm like, that's a no good title. And so getting my ego out of it while also preserving my own creativity and being like, okay, I presented you. I've gone as far as I can go to convince you that this is not going to be successful. Like, I've been, that is not a good title for a book, even as you're, like, sending it out to publishers. And then learning, like, when to back off and to disentangle yourself. So a big part of it is the self-preservation. I actually had somebody drop into my LinkedIn, a fellow ghostwriter, yesterday, drop into my LinkedIn and was asking me for advice about how to weather this industry. And wow. It's tough. And the contraction because of AI is real. So embedded in the textbook is also going to be some ideas about how to tackle AI, how to talk around it, how to deal with people who are going to use it. Because the bottom line is you are going to have clients out there who use it. So we can, like, turtle up and hide from it, or we can just turn face on and be like, okay, they're going to use it. And I still want to have a job. So I got to figure out how to make that relationship work. Even though AI is abhorrent, it's crap. It's a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. I do think that in society, we're going to see a turn away from it for, like, people who are consuming content. It doesn't feel good. The bottom line is, it doesn't feel good when I read something that's AI written. So anyway, there you go. So that's kind of like the broad strokes of the book. And then it's also structured so that if there are any college professors out there listening, it's very easy for you to plug into a class so that, like, you can just plug and play and teach a ghostwriting class based off this textbook, and your lessons will be really easy to just create.
Easy to create indeed. Because, yeah, think about AI, it's like, shoot, like, at first folks like, oh God, we're screwed. And then after a while, it's like, it's a sentence, but it's not sound right. Like, it's all out of place, and it sounds like it's repeating itself. It's like, dude, this is, like, the hell is this? And all this other smooth, not-so-smooth jazz, indeed. So, my goodness, and now I remember the question I was going to ask you earlier. So, my goodness, so with ghostwriting in multiple genres, like, how is it like making the switch back and forth from, like, fiction to, like, nonfiction?
Well, I would say that I approach most of my nonfiction from a fictional standpoint. I am still concerned with storytelling. So the memoirs that I write are not usually structured in chronological order. There are times when I do that, or they will have like a rough chronology, but we are diving into other ways. I'm too creative to just like write a straight memoir that's just kind of boring. So I don't see a big difference in them. Now, in terms of like nonfiction writing, because I've written like, I wrote a book on farm finance, right? Like I've written all kinds of books. In terms of that, it's just structure. You know, it really does come back to you sit down and you bing, bang, boom. Even like the textbook on ghostwriting, and it's a nonfiction book. It's about structuring it effectively, and then it's very easy. That's like teaching. I really view any of those nonfiction books like that. It's like the work that I do as a professor. So that's kind of how fiction is very much storytelling. I will tell you the much harder jump, and harder but also really freaking fun, Dom, is when I am working on a screenplay and a book at the same time, which is always, I mean, I'm always working on a screenplay and a book at the same time. The modality of language in those two things is so different that it is really fun. And you have to flip your brain like back and forth. So that's much more challenging. In screenplays, we are trying to lessen the description and just like move, right? You're trying to move at the speed of film. Versus in a long form book, you are trying to immerse them. The goal is to like pull it out. And like, you want to move so that nobody gets bored. But at the same time, you have all this space and room in your language to like take your time and describe things. And yeah, I think it's fun, dude.
That's good. Means you're in the right place indeed. If you're having fun with us, right, indeed. That's right. She's in business, y'all, and she's having fun with it. That's a good sign. That's right, indeed. It's right, indeed. So if you got a project, you're like, hey, I do not want to write a darn lick of none of this crap. Like, hey, let me find all the help her to get me to the freaking promised land here. I hear there's milk and honey. Probably more milk than honey. Since the honey costs more sometimes.
It's one of the things that people in both in films and in books, they woefully underestimate the amount of time and effort. Like we can write a screenplay that's fantastic. We can write a book that's amazing. That's like a third of it, a half of it. Getting it out there to the world, that's a whole different thing. So in books, I can write it, but then I have to find some way to publish it. And then I have to actually market the damn thing, because even clients who have traditional publisher will only get you so far. Like you have to market that. You got to get out. You got to go on the podcast. You got to go like sit in the bookshops. You got to put social media stuff out there. It's so much work. I think it's totally worth it. And it's like a high. Like I don't understand why people do drugs. Like I write books. It's the same kind of high. And the same thing with like a film. We can write a kick-ass screenplay, but then you got to like produce it, and then you have to edit it, and then you have to market it. It was like all so many steps. So yeah, there you go, Dom.
Yes, right indeed. The honey money disappears. It goes to the marketing budget.
It goes to the marketing budget.
There you go. Use the honey money to eventually get more honey, maybe. Too much honey, a grizzly bear shows up.
You're in there. And you hope it's Winnie the Pooh and not Cocaine Bear. That's just what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's no cocaine budget, so I think we're safe from Cocaine Bear, hopefully.
Did you know that Cocaine Bear can do weddings? Kentucky. I went to see Cocaine Bear this summer in Kentucky. Yes. And apparently he can do weddings now.
What? How? How does that even work?
There's some law in Kentucky that if you say you're married or something. And so the people who bought Cocaine Bear, there's these dudes that bought him and put him in a strip mall. I went to see him. He's great. And they said, well, he can do your wedding because that's a technically legal in Kentucky. This is the kind of weird stuff I love, Dom. Like, let's...
Well, very good. So, my goodness, Autumn, since you're on the guest side of the game today on these wonderful podcasts, is there a question that you wish folks would ask you more often when you're doing interviews like this?
Oh my gosh, that's like the toughest question I think I've ever Ooh. I think that I wish people would ask me more about, I mean, it's funny. Okay, so as much as you come on these things and you talk about yourself, if I'm being real, you never really talk about yourself, right? Like I talk about my talking points. Like I talk about like the things that I go around and I've got them. I don't have mine on lists. I know that people keep them on lists. Like people will like script themselves. And I don't really do that. But people don't actually ask you about you, right? They ask you about your work. They ask you about whatever thing you're shilling. But they don't actually ask you about you. So I think that would be like nice. I ask people about themselves all the time. Like I'm constantly asking people. So there you go.
Ah, me lucky indeed, me lucky indeed. So, still a vegetarian these days?
Oh, lucky to. I am still a vegetarian. I'm a lapsed vegan, but I've been lapsed for like 12 years, so I guess I don't know if that even counts.
A lapsed vegan. It's almost like, hey, let me have some fish every now and then. They eat each other, it's okay. I won't eat a cow.
Yeah, well, I went through that. So this is, and I guess it always does tie to my work, so that maybe that's not fair. I was a vegetarian for like 12 years, right? And I was a vegan for 12 years, like a hardcore, like one of those crazy vegans that was like...
the cult vegan.
And then I had my third child was born, and she was born with severe disabilities. And when I promise I'm going to turn this back around to something like that, where I'm shilling something. So she was born with severe disabilities. She's born with severe disabilities, and Hermione was amazing. But at the time, and it's still this case, infant formula always has milk in it. So vegans don't have like any milk or any eggs or anything. And so when she was born, they had a supplement. I had to pump, and they had to supplement that with formula. Like that was the moment when I stopped being a vegan, because in order for her to live, she couldn't be vegan. Like it was not possible. And so then there was like a cheese pizza ordered like the next day. So like my kids are all vegetarian. I have offered them. I'm like, you don't have to be a vegetarian. Like you can eat meat. And they're like, what the frick is wrong with you, Mom? Like, of course I'm never going to eat meat. I was like, look, I'm just not judging you. I'm just saying that I accept you for whoever, whatever you do. You decide to eat a burger. So yeah, that's like my journey. I became vegan because I saw a documentary on the Civil War. I don't know. I was like 17 years old and was very impressionable and felt that like the loss of life was so useless that I didn't want to participate in the loss of life. And so I became vegan. And yeah, and so Hermione, I do have a screenplay that's in production that's about her. It's called Infinity Care. My animation team is currently working on it. I have an audio cut in process, and we're making that. That's the crowdfunding campaign we're going to launch on March 26th, which is the anniversary of her death. And it's like a short sci-fi animated script about her. So there you go. You asked about me. I'll turn it back around to shill it.
You hilarious. Like, I'm a shield, dang gummit. I'm a shield.
I keep my top.
It's all good. It's all good indeed. It's all good indeed. And here you got a book that's going to be relaunching too, on top of everything else. It's going to be a busy freaking year.
Yes, so that is a feminist erotica novel. We talk about fiction, and it came out a couple years ago, but they've asked me to republish it So Amy book one is going to be available February 14th. And it's about a woman. It's about a mom of three, shocker, who secretly becomes a swinger behind her husband's back. And it's a fun book. And it's in process. There'll be another one that comes out. We're working on the sequel. So there you go.
Okay, cool. Well, if that book were a food, what would it be and why?
Okay, if that book were a food, and this is in one of the opening scenes, that book were a food, it would be wine in a sippy cup. Because one of the characters, she goes into the kitchen and her husband has kind of like left her. She's put the kids to bed and everything in the kitchen is dirty. Like all the kids and everybody are just left a mess. And the only clean dish in the kitchen is a sippy cup. And so she cracks a bottle of wine and drinks wine out of a sippy cup. So that would be telling for that book.
I guess tea time got a little too real. And for a second, I thought you were about to go the route of, oh, yeah, she can't hold her liquor. She has to drink it out of a sippy cup.
Oh, can Amy hold her liquor? You know, I tried to think that she does. There's a fair bit of alcohol in that book. So I don't know. She likes it for sure.
Well, okay. There you go. Sir, indeed. Well, it's good to know I wasn't going that route because I was going to bust out laughing. That would be hilarious. Like, yeah. Out and about, out of nowhere. It's like, I'll take a shot. And like, hey, what are you doing with that glass? No, put that away because she pulls out a sippy cup. Keeps in the purse.
Man, if you've known a mom of little kids, man, they always have shit like in their purses or wherever. They just make them appear out of nowhere.
Yep. They're black holes. Sorry, indeed. Every time my mom will usually ask me for something, I get to tell you, like, hey, go ahead and find this thing. It's like, the hell is this crap? I was supposed to find a medicine bottle. What is this?
My son was doing that last night. He's like, Mom, me and my girlfriend really want to make sushi this weekend. Do we have the stuff? And I just go in the cabinet and I'm like, here you go. Y'all can make it today. It's like, how has this been here? Dude, come on.
Yes, right indeed. That's right. You know the ham and mom stands for everything? That's right indeed. There we go. Or better yet, we'll just spell mommy with the E at the end instead of a Y. There we go. Now, mommy hand stands for everything. There we go. That's how it works now. Bad spelling at all. Making the English majors mad. You love to see it.
Man. No, but I'm not one of the professors with horrible dumb. I don't really enjoy the grammar of it all. Like, I don't really teach like all those little ins and outs to my students. I focus on story and not some people talking about, you know, prepositional phrases and things. I'm like, I don't care. Like, I just go with the vibes. I'm a writer of vibes. We'll figure out the grammar later.
Oh, okay. All right. There you go. One of your new monikers, the writer of vibes. There you go. Her first name's Autumn, so you know what to expect, y'all. It's going to be some nice cool weather where you get to put on a hoodie, some hot chocolate, maybe some pumpkin spice and some pumpkin pie. That's right. Depending on where you are, you might have to rake some leaves, maybe make a pile of leaves and jump in them. That's right indeed. Yeah. I'm just messing with you. Well, we're coming down to the magical question that every guest gets to receive, and that is, if you're to wake up tomorrow and you're 25 again, but you're still in the current year with all of your knowledge and experience, what advice would you give to yourself?
Oh, gosh. I would say don't marry that man. That's horrible. No, don't say that. No, probably that. I would say to go and pursue your actual goals. When I was 25, I was working a corporate job for Volvo Construction Equipment. And it was lucrative, and it was great. Fresh out of college, I did parts marketing. I learned how to drive backhoe loaders. But I had the opportunity to move to England with that job and did not like follow that career path. So swing bigger. I've never lived outside of North Carolina, Dom. 25-year-old me should have gone further afield.
What you're saying is I missed out on the hybrid North Carolinian / British accent. Okay.
That is the message. North Carolina British accent. I think I have an accent, Dom. People tell me that I do, and I'm like, what is the matter with y'all?
It's barely there, but when you said that, y'all came out. But hey, I can hear and understand you clear as day. Some of my fellow Baltimoreans, there. Good luck outside of it, depending on where you are. Folks, don't call me a Baltimorean because I put the T in Baltimore. Sorry, indeed. And funny thing that folks always forget about that question is that it's you in the current day. So basically, you'll be 6 years older than your current oldest son. So you'd basically be a Gen Z mom.
Yeah, I would. You know, I don't think that kid's getting out of the house. He's going to college. So I'm like, yes.
Let him go. Yes, right indeed. It's always funny when folks really think about it, go deep beyond the surface. It's like, yep. Like, oh, this is kind of creepy, but kind of cool at the same time. That's right. So many possibilities.
So many possibilities, but I think that people miss out that there's possibilities now, right? Every age that you ask that question, like, well, I could go move to London like right now. I could just make that choice. I could go move to LA and I'd choose not to do all those things. But I did jump into the movie business. Like at 5 years ago, I had no connection to it. And like now here I am, like I was in LA pitching a few months ago in New York pitching, and then I'll be out there again. Like, talk to people, get stuff made. How it goes.
That's right. That's how it goes indeed. It goes north, y'all. That's right indeed. That's right. No matter what age you are, there are possibilities still there, dang gummit. That's right indeed. That's the vitamin P we all need, known as possibility. That's right. Your mind might have went somewhere else with that one, probably. It's okay. There can be two thoughts with one thought sometimes.
All day.
Oh, never mind. Three thoughts. Yeah, it could be people. But anyways, folks need to keep up with you. And all that you do. So for those who need to do just that and be on the lookout for more great stuff from you, Autumn, what's the best way for folks to do so?
My website, autumncarrying.com. You'll find links to all my socials there. I am Autumn Carrying everywhere, at Autumn Carrying on all like the apps. And I post updates every single day. I post video updates about my progress in getting my scripts made, called What the Hell Am I Doing to Get My Scripts Made? So you'll find those on like TikTok, assuming TikTok continues to exist, and Instagram Reels and YouTube Shorts and all that stuff. And then you can book a session with me. So if you go to my website, there's a link and you can book a free session just to network or catch up, because I do enjoy all that stuff. So I talk to people all the time.
Wait a second. That's real awesome. Wait, did you say Carrie? Or is it that? Did I mispronounce your last name this whole freaking time?
You know, my handle on everything is Autumn Carrying. Because okay, so my last name growing up, I go by Autumn Carrying. My last name growing up was Autumn Grocer. So we had this family friend who would say, instead of Autumn Carrying Grocer, he would say Autumn Carrying Groceries. time. And so I kept like the autumn carrying. And so autumn carrying like on all the apps and everything. So there, it's like my little handle, like at autumn carrying on TikTok and YouTube and all that mess.
Okay, I was about to say, damn. It was right there in front of me this whole time. The one time I forgot to ask is the time I butchered it and made the vegans mad. Like, damn, I was about to be like, crap.
Make all the vegans mad. No, you know, I picked Autumn Karen as my pen name right about the time, and I bought my domain name. This is like 7 years ago. Karen became like a thing. And Karen is like a family name. I always thought it was beautiful. And then it's like, you're being a Karen. Oh my God, I'm a white woman who chose this. I'm just going to lean in and go with it. Lean in and go. It's too late.
Well, if you want to speak to the manager, I'm already here, so. I got nothing for you. I'm just a random podcaster here. Yeah, I know you're pissed when that happened.
What even is this? That's okay. It is what it is. And I do go speak to the manager. Like, I have done that. I try to keep it real and not be a bitch about it, but who knows?
Hey, well, name of the game is, if they just see the first name, it's A-okay. It's like, wait a second, there's a twinge of that behavior. Is the name Mao? Oh, Autumn. Okay. All right.
You walk into something, you're like, oh my gosh, like I have this thing that happened, and like I don't want to be that person, but I also want my refund. I don't know, like, how do I like reconcile that? Always be nice to people. My kids are always like, anytime I'm on the phone with somebody fussing with them, I'm always thanking them, be like, look, I know you're just like a cog in the wheel, I know you just like work for this big corporation, I'm not trying to make your life hard, but also like I canceled my cable 3 months ago and y'all keep charging me, so like I'm not trying to make your life hard, sir. But can I speak to your manager?
No sweat. Moments like those is like, hey, it's justified. It's like, hey, you're freaking stealing money here. I canceled this shit months ago, bro.
Just the bad guys. Always. Yeah.
That's right, indeed. Always, indeed. That's right. Just like saliva, always. The rock band that is. For those who went south when they heard the word before another word. Well, enough references to 2002, 2003. Any parting words before we close up shop, Autumn?
No, just like keep on writing, y'all. Keep on telling stories. Like somebody's got to tell them, and it might as well be you.
If you're hearing this part of the episode, that means you're one cool individual. Thanks a bunch for tuning in, and if you enjoyed what you heard, be sure to share it with at least one other person in your network. Bonus points for three. And be sure to check out the backlog too while you're at it, because there are hundreds of wonderful episodes to choose from as well.